Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link this Thursday, the 28th of June. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Remember to send your comments and we'll read them definitely whenever we can, live on air. Coming up, a fire sweeps through one of Nairobi's largest open-air markets, killing 15 people. 70 others have been injured and are now hospitalized.
9 of them died at the scene. We have also 5 who died on their way to Kenyatta National Hospital. We have 70 people admitted. 8 of them, we've been told, are in critical condition.
A UN report reveals that more than 10,000 children were killed or maimed in conflict last year.
We have seen a doubling, even tripling of the use of young girls as human bombs. They're just put in a vest and released, and they don't know what they're carrying, and they go straight home and they're blown up together with their families and the village.
Also on the program, we will be talking about the shocks and surprises in the ongoing World Cup tournament in Russia.
But before all that, let's hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Benita van Eysen with DW News. Europe's leaders are in Brussels to seek common ground on the migrant crisis. The 28-member European Union is divided on what to do with refugees. One option would be to screen refugees in countries such as Niger, Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, and Egypt. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said these countries, where migrants often land before heading to Europe, need to be consulted too.
Denn es müssen zwei Dinge gehen. Das erste ist, es kann der Bewerber oder derjenige, der Schutz sucht in Europa.
Two things need to be respected. First, an asylum seeker who looks for protection in Europe cannot choose the country where he will apply for asylum. And secondly, we cannot leave countries where asylum seekers arrive first completely alone.
Können wir auch nicht die Länder, in denen alle Ankünfte stattfinden, völlig alleine lassen?
Germany took in the largest number of refugees at the height of the crisis in 2015, when more than 1 million migrants entered Europe, mostly by sea and many from war-torn Syria. Merkel is under immense pressure to come up with a solution or face the collapse of her coalition government. US President Donald Trump and his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, have confirmed that they will meet in Finland on July 16. The two sides have been preparing for the Helsinki talks, where the two leaders are expected to discuss a range of bilateral affairs, as well as the situation in Syria and Ukraine. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has welcomed the summit, which comes as tensions between Moscow and the military alliance simmer over issues such as Russia's stance on Ukraine.
NATO is in favor of dialogue with Russia. We don't want a new Cold War. We don't want a new arms race. We don't want to isolate Russia. We want to talk to Russia. Russia is there to stay.
In Kenya, 15 people have been confirmed dead and at least 70 injured after a fire swept through a market in the capital, Nairobi. President Uhuru Kenyatta said young children were among the victims. The fire is not the first at Gikomba Market in Pumwani, where some of the traders live with their families. The cause of the fire is not known, but authorities said they had declared the smoldering site a crime scene. The World Trade Organization has ruled in favor of Australia in a major trade dispute over its law on plain packaging for tobacco products. The organization rejected arguments by Cuba, Indonesia, Honduras, and the Dominican Republic in ruling that the use of plain packaging contributed to improving public health. The four countries had said Australia's law unjustifiably infringed tobacco trademarks and violated intellectual property rights. They are expected to appeal the WTO ruling. Colombia has triumphed over Senegal with a 1-0 score that earns it a spot in the final knockout stages of the World Cup. Yerry Mina scored on a header in the 74th minute. Senegal's defeat means it is the first time since 1982 that an African team has failed to qualify for the knockout stage. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Benita van Eysen.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn, Germany. And of course, you can join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We start off in Kenya. A fire swept one of Nairobi's largest open-air markets early today, killing 15 people and sending 70 injured to hospitals as traders who lived there struggled to wake their families and flee. Rescue teams searched for more bodies and survivors in Gikomba Market in the Pumwani low-income neighborhoods in the capital of Kenya, Nairobi. Many Kenyans shop for second-hand clothes from the market, which also supplies other vendors with used clothes from Europe and the United States. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula sent this report, which starts with the sound of one of the stall owners, Samuel Masharia.
At night,
fire started here. It caught sponges. It caught a power line, and then the power line collapsed. Fire raged throughout.
Says
they're clearing the place and then see what the government says. And I can now see here, it looks like this was a place where timber was kept. A lot of timber has been spoiled. Corrugated iron sheets lie here everywhere. A lot of smoke. We are about to hear the Nairobi County Commissioner, Amos Mariba, who is just standing close to me here.
Actually, this fire broke out at 2 a.m. this morning, and so far we have confirmed that we have lost 15 people. 9 of them died at the scene. We have also 5 who died on their way to Kenyatta National Hospital. We have 70 people admitted. 8 of them, we've been told, are in critical condition.
Looking at Gikomba, being famous as it is this the first time that it has happened like this, claiming many lives?
Indeed, this is not the first time. Plans are there to see that there are measures to mitigate these things from happening, and there is a plan to reconstruct the market so that in future we avoid having such fires.
That is Nairobi County Commissioner Amos Mariba talking to our reporter there, James Shimanyula. Kenyans are now calling to an end to these perpetual fires at the famous Gikomba market. Take a listen.
My suggestion is to reduce congestion here because there is a lot of houses, and also these big buildings, they have to be removed.
People should not be living where the business is going on.
The government should know the various places that people are congested. They should separate people from businesses, and they should warn people from staying congested areas.
I think what the government should do, it should relocate those people. They should be separated with the business. Because as you can see, you never know. Maybe there is an enmity between the businessmen and business ladies. So, and that might be the cause of the fire. So what the government should do is to separate or to relocate those people.
Those are voices of Kenyans giving their views after today's fire at Nairobi Gikomba Market, which killed 15 and injured 70 others.
In an exclusive interview, former FBI Director James Comey has told DW's Conflict Zone, a program of hard-hitting interviews hosted by Tim Sebastian, that despite his career in law enforcement, he doesn't draw the darkest inference about U.S. President Donald Trump's vehement denials of colluding with Russia. James Comey was nominated in 2013 by former U.S. President Barack Obama to head FBI, the U.S. principal federal law enforcement agency, for a 10-year term. But in May 2017, newly elected President Donald Trump fired Comey in a move that was criticized as possible obstruction of justice and helped launch the probe into potential collusion between Trump's campaign and Russia. Former FBI Director speaking to DW's Tim Sebastian. More to this interview, visit our website, dw.com.
We didn't know enough to know whether there was anything to it. So I actually don't even remember thinking about that. We were beginning an investigation. We knew the Russians were messing with our election. The separate question was, were any Americans helping them? And we didn't know that at the time. And by the way, we had reason to investigate. We knew the Russians were doing something. We had wisps of information that some Americans might be working with them, didn't know that. And again, this is what people sometimes confuse. Hillary Clinton was the subject of that investigation that opened began publicly and closed publicly in 2016. Donald Trump was not the subject of any investigation during that election.
It was an investigation into his campaign. Therefore, by association, it was into him as well.
Well, in a sense, it wasn't an investigation of his campaign. It was an investigation on discrete Americans to try to see if there's any connection between the Russian effort and these people.
And his campaign.
Well, these were people, some of whom were associated with the campaign, but there was not an investigation of the campaign.
But nevertheless, even with what you had, you allowed tens of millions of Americans to vote without any of this knowledge.
Well, what knowledge is the question I would ask? What would people have
me say? Without
any
of the strong suspicions that were being passed around by the American intelligence community at that time.
So the FBI director should have announced in 2016 that there are suspicions of wrongdoing by Americans? That was actually never even seriously considered. Nobody brought that up and said we ought to be talking about a brand new counterintelligence investigation about Americans that we don't know whether they've done anything wrong. So I reject the premise that that was something we should have disclosed. I do think it's an important question about whether the Obama administration should have said something earlier about the Russian effort. But there's no serious argument we should be talking about a brand new counterintelligence case that doesn't involve the candidate as a subject that's just beginning in the summer of 2016.
Former FBI director speaking to DW's Tim Sebastian. For more on this, visit our website, dw.com. And of course, the latest reports coming in now is that Senegal, the last African team in the World Cup, is out of the tournament. I know most of you are very sad. Go on to our Facebook page, DW Africa on Facebook, and leave us your comments. What do you think? What should we do now that all the African teams are out of the tournament? And now we head to Congo for another story of the UN report, where more than 10,000 children were killed or maimed in conflict last year, while more than 8,000 youngsters were recruited or used as combatants, according to a report by the United Nations. African countries mentioned in the report include Nigeria, South Sudan, Central African Republic, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Crispin Mwakideu has more on the report.
After the report was released, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said he was outraged by the huge number of children who have fallen victim to armed conflict. The report says cases of child recruitment quadrupled in the Central African Republic and doubled in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It, however, remained steady in Somalia and South Sudan. The United Nations expert on children and armed conflict, Virginia Gamba, said the report paints a bleak picture in as far as protecting children in armed conflict is concerned.
The more worrisome violations that we're seeing an increase of, which in effect is a setback, that will be killing and maiming, attacks on schools and hospitals, and recruitment and use.
According to the damning report, government forces committed at least 6,000 of these crimes, while the majority were carried out by non-state armed groups. Crises in countries such as Central African Republic, South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria's Boko Haram insurgency were the main reason for the serious increase in violations. Here's Virginia Gamba again.
We have seen a doubling, even tripling, of the use of young girls as human bombs to attack their own villagers. And these are not suicide bombers because they are not committed. They're just put in a vest and released, and they don't know what they're carrying, and they go straight home and they're blown up together with their families and the village.
UN Secretary General Guterres said the best way to reverse this horrific situation is to promote peaceful solutions to conflicts.
That's Crispin Mwakideu with that report. Now, we have most of you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Sami Mwangi gives us a thumbs up. Thank you. Wamtolaba says, very sad. My condolences to the bereaved families. That is about the fire at Kikomba Market in Kenya. And Abdutalavak Sheikh says he's listening live and clear from Somalia. And of course, we have gotten the sad news for all the football fans that Senegal is out of the World Cup. And most of you have been giving us your views. Moussa Dembélé in Gambia thinks that Africa should not participate in the World Cup at all and should just stick to the Africa Cup. And of course, we had someone new in Northwest Cameroon who says he's not trying to take football too much to heart. Well, this World Cup has many surprises. So keep giving us your comments on our Facebook page.
Welcome back to the Africa Link again, and would like also to welcome our listeners in Lagos, Yaounde, and Accra. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you to all of you who are listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, inmates in Uganda's prisons are demanding conjugal rights in a bid to prevent their families from breaking up.
People are in prison for 20 years, for 10 years, 5 years. By the time you go back home, there's no family to talk about. We should also put in place a system where their families can be protected.
Also on the program, we will hear from youths in Africa's Silicon Valley, but this time in Lagos, Nigeria, telling us about their startups and business ideas. For sure, we will have all that. But before that, as you may well know, people are closely following the World Cup tournament in Russia. Surprisingly, World Cup champions Germany were crushed out yesterday after losing to South Korea. African teams' hopes are now dashed after today's defeat of Senegal by Colombia. To talk more on this, I'm joined in the studio by two of my colleagues, Sonia Pointier and Marie Sina. Let's start with you, Sonia. What do you think after today's defeat?
Well, it's very disappointing for Africa because Senegal started well by winning their first match and then they draw against Japan. Japan, which was really like a strong team. And now to lose against Colombia. I know that the Colombian team, they also managed to win their first match, but it was really disappointing for Africa, disappointing for Sadio Mane and his colleagues, and also for the coach who was really hopeful in terms of going to the next round.
And of course, people expected a lot from Sadio Mane and his colleagues, the coach as well, who has been
the coach was very pushing these young boys to really make sure that they have the strength, they have the capacity to really go to the next round. But I just think that they were not disciplined enough at the end, because a match is 90 minutes. You really have to stay focused all the time in order for you not to lose just like that. So it's really a shock. I believe that they could have managed really to beat Colombia, but unfortunately, this is soccer. You can predict, but at the end, the score is the score.
Colombia will now have to face the winner between England or Belgium, who are also playing tonight. Do you think they're up to it?
I don't really think so. I mean, whether Belgium or England, is going to be very difficult for Colombia to go through. So, especially Belgium, because Belgium is a very good team, and the way they are playing, they are very focused, and then they really know what they are doing, especially with the instructions from the coach. So yeah, it will be difficult for Colombia to really go to the quarterfinals.
Let me talk to you now, Marisina. Of course, you're disappointed because Germany is out. Did this come as a shock to you?
Yeah, it came as a shock to me, as it did to probably many Germans, because Germany has actually never been eliminated in the group stage before. We hadn't been doing well this World Cup. We lost to Mexico, and even to Sweden, it was only a very narrow win. But I don't think anybody was expecting us to lose against South Korea. I watched the first half, and nobody scored any goals. So I remember starting the second half and being so sure that now we're going to turn things around, and even just one goal, that would be enough to keep me hopeful. But then obviously we lost 2-0, which is a big surprise. On the other hand, if you look at the statistics of World Cup winners, I mean, in 2010, Italy also was eliminated in the group round after being the World Cup winner at the previous championship. And the same goes for Spain in 2014. So I guess we are just continuing the curse of the World Cup winners. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. I saw that actually, the last four World Cups, and it's really interesting how the teams always lose after winning. Anyway, now, which team do you support now after that?
I've had to think about that. So I was initially going to say I'm going to support Iceland, because obviously they have this special team of many players who are not even professional players, and it's a tiny country, but Iceland is out now as well. So I think I'm going to go for Belgium. They've been doing really well so far. It's a small neighboring country, so I guess it's as close as we're going to get.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies, for your time. That was Marie Sina with my colleague here, Sonia Pointier.
On. And as you've heard in that opener, it's time for our weekly Youth Zone segment that focuses on issues that directly affect the youth. This week, we'll take you to Nigeria's Yabakon Valley. That is the version of America's Silicon Valley. It is located in the middle of Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital, and this is where young entrepreneurs develop business ideas and startups.
On paper, lots of attempts sound amazing, but only a few will actually flourish. That said, Nigeria's startup scene is growing and getting more international attention as it does. Catherine Gensler went to find out more, and her report is now presented by Benita Van Essen.
Here from the rooftop terrace of the six-story building, the view over Lagos is stunning. It's still early and there are only a few people around networking. Most have their heads down, checking their emails and answering messages. CC Hub provides the space so that young people in Nigeria's first tech hub can make and use their connections quickly and easily. Tun Tunde Anjou is the personnel manager of the hub.
So about 7 years ago, the founders, Boston Tijani and Femi Longe, had this interesting idea. For them, they felt like Nigeria is a country that has a lot of social problems, but they felt like the people who could solve those social problems were the citizens, Nigerians themselves.
Debo Odulana is one of them and wants to improve daily life in his home country. After living and studying medicine abroad, he was shocked when he returned to Lagos in 2011, only to find out the myriad of problems health practitioners face, even setting up a simple clinic. Partly out of frustration and partly out of a wish to try something new, he decided to start up Doctura, a clinic in Lagos where medical doctors can rent healthcare facilities. It also offers a website where clients can browse the healthcare network to find the right practitioner. Odulana explains.
With our project, we've decided to go the infrastructure route. By providing this infrastructure, we are taking out a lot of the overheads in healthcare because we are not running like a typical healthcare facility that must be functional all the day. So if we don't have clients, we don't need to turn on the lights, for example.
All over Africa, Nigerians have a reputation for being canny entrepreneurs. In 2017, the country claimed the title for the largest economy on the continent, with a GDP of $400.6 billion. In fact, wherever you go in Africa, you'll come across Nigerian shops. But despite all this business know-how, developing startups is a little different, says Matthias Froelich-Rehfeldt. He works for the project Make It in Africa, which is carried out by the German development corporation GIZ. The project supports up to 50 startups in Kenya and Nigeria. Today, young entrepreneurs at the hub offer a wide range of services, from e-commerce and payment services to health, entertainment, and civic education, which is what Budget concentrates on. But do these little enterprises really change society? Here in Lagos, they seem to provide services for a middle class. Daily life for the majority of Nigerians is a world away from the cool startup hub. According to various estimations, half or even more of the population of 190 million people live below the poverty line on less than $1.9 per day. Despite that, Matthias Froelich-Rehfeldt is optimistic.
We believe digitalization, when used the right way and by the right people, can be a driving force to change the economy. Startups are really the drivers for economic and social change in a lot of countries in sub-Saharan Africa.
A report by Katrin Gensler.
Speaking out.
Human rights activists have renewed their pressure on the Ugandan government to allow conjugal visits for incarcerated inmates. The move has also been supported by the lawmakers in a bid to prevent family breakups.
Now, due to long prison sentences, many families in Uganda have broken up, and inside the walls, inmates in most of Uganda's prisons have resorted to homosexuality. From Kampala, Alex Gita sent this report.
My name is Umar Musisi. I was imprisoned for a long time at a time when my wife was still quite a young woman. At the time of my release, I found out she had three children from another man. In other words, she had decided to leave me.
Umar Musisi was sentenced to 10 years in prison for involuntary manslaughter. His wife could not wait and decided to look for another man.
Although inmates in Uganda's prisons have some rights, Musisi believes authorities can do more to prevent future breakups of marriages.
I was very hurt, and I'm still wondering why the government forgets the prisoners, yet they are also human beings who have and should be given full human rights to access their partners and keep families together. The facilities should be provided.
According to a report by the Uganda Human Rights Commission, out of 600 inmates interviewed, more than 300, both men and women, have lost their partners. And this is why civil society groups are pushing parliament to come up with a legislation that will grant inmates conjugal visits. I spoke to two lawmakers, Simeon Nsubuga and Gilbert Olanya, who support the idea that inmates should be accorded conjugal visits.
People are in prison for 20 years, for 10 years, 5 years. By the time you go back home, there's no family to talk about. We should also put in place system where their families can be protected.
When we were in Masindi district, we found that the husband has been in prison together with the wife for 10 years. All of them, they just look at each other. Why not to gazette a place whereby we can give them that time at least once in a while?
In the absence of these facilities, however, prisoners have turned to each other. The head of the Uganda Prisoners Service, Dr. Johnson Byabashaija, has confirmed that homosexuality is common in Ugandan prisons, although the act remains illegal in the country.
We also have some risk factors in the prisons. Men having sex with men, that is very, very, very obvious in prisons, inside the prisons. What surprised me is that even the staff reported that they were having sex with their fellow staff. 2.9% recorded that they have had sex with male partners. This is very serious. For prisoners, it is understandable. For staff, how?
Alex Gita with that report.
And of course, before that, we were listening to the head of Ugandan Prison Service, Dr. Johnson Byabashaija, talking about what is happening in prisons without the conjugal rights. And of course, you have also been giving us your views on this story. Senior Kamau in Nairobi says, whatever God has joined together, no one should put asunder. He says, continues to say, God joined them in matrimony. Why should the government put them asunder? He thinks it's a difficult question to judge whether or not prisoners who are committing the crime should be denied conjugal rights. And Mutwanyo Arab, also from Kenya, says he supports the prisoners' demands. He wrote, prisoners are human beings who also have body feelings. Some of them are serving long sentences, and therefore it is necessary they be given the chance to get this. In one way or the other, he feels this could reduce the possibility of homosexuality in prisons. And we have one here from Cameroon. The name is Nigaps, and says that spouses should be allowed to visit prisoners. What about you, our listeners? What do you think about this? You can write on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Zonyo Defodo, who seems to be writing from Uganda, says, I'll propose that this be applicable to inmates with longer sentences ranging from 1 year or more. For those inmates serving a few months, perhaps they don't need visits because strong relations can't just break up in months. So overall, many divided opinions on this topic. I will go on to read the last one here from Makaveli Ochuku, who says, thinks it should depend on the crime that the inmates had committed. So, of course, you can also join in this debate. And on our Facebook page, most of you are also listening to us live. I can see Lucky Highest, that's a funny name, who says Biafra referendum is what we are asking for. Okay, so, of course, we will talk about that when there's something coming up. Dream Chaser Gregory says he is listening from Italy. And there is someone called DJ Comrade who is sending his condolences to all the Kenyans who were caught up in that incident at the Kikomba market, where 15 people died and, of course, others injured. And, of course, we have also been asking about the Nigerian communal violence story. Will this arrest help quieten critics because the government is now stepping up? And I'll read one, just one, because time is up. Prince Young says that President Buhari is handling the situation incompetent and that he should not be allowed to rule Nigeria. He said that most of those arrested might, in fact, be innocent people. So keep these comments coming. I'm Zipporah Nyambura. From all of us here, have a wonderful evening.